All right, this is Craig Woodbill, and thank you for joining us here on Radioactive Magazine. I have with us today Mayor David Alvey from Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas. And welcome, Mayor.
Thank you very much.
And to start with, one question is, you called mayor in the city, but you're also over the unified government.
Correct.
So do you have a separate title for that?
So that's called, so it's mayor slash CEO. CEO does not stand for chief executive officer. It stands for county executive officer. And so after unification in 1997, those functions are combined. Of course, Bonner Springs and Edwardsville still maintain their own mayor and their own city council, and so they handle all of their city affairs. But any of the county functions that would cover Bonner Springs, Edwardsville, including the sheriff's department, including the court system, parks, those are all on the county budget. And so there is some oversight of the county, obviously oversight of the county budget, the functions of the actual city functions of Bonner Springs and Edwardsville are handled by their own mayor and city commission.
All right. And I want to start with the economy. First, if you could tell us what your vision is of how you're going to grow the economy in Wyandotte County and put people back to work.
Good, yeah. So I think what has been present in Wyandotte County for generations has been obviously very strong transportation economy with the Burlington Northern and the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad. We've always had been very strong industrial area because the Fairfax Industrial District, which was actually the first planned industrial park in the nation in the 1920s, that has always been a robust part of our economy. We could also look to the areas, you know, through Kansas Avenue around the railroad, the most heavily trafficked freight yard in the nation, and there are other projects for a commercial industrial space around the county. So that's always been a real strength of ours, and that's going to continue. Then, of course, when you layer on the tourism district at the Legends and the Village West, what we have is now greater revenue sources from sales tax revenues. Now that the STAR bonds have been, most of them have been paid off, though there are some that have been rolled over to handle other projects like the Pinnacle, the training facility that Sporting KC brought in. So we believe, we're confident that that kind of development in the Legends Village West area is going to continue. And in fact, there is, as you know, the project for the American Royal to relocate to the area west of the Legends, and then some kind of a resort community area with a convention center and hotels in the same area. We also anticipate that there will be development along the Turner Diagonal. So, you know, $17.5 million of state infrastructure funds that were directed to localities were redirected to that Turner Diagonal area to help with the Amazon, but there will be more development, retail and residential development there. But I think we can have a lot of these kinds of developments. We really need to focus in on our traditional neighborhoods, those neighborhoods built before World War II. And I'm going to just make a short case for this, that this past year, I was able to attend some presentations at the Kansas City Public Library at the Plaza Library, sponsored by Crosby Kemper, and really focusing in on traditional neighborhoods and their development. And so the presenters were Chuck Marone of Strong Towns Incorporated, and the second presentation was by Joe Minicozzi of Urban 3, and then the third and final, which I was not able to attend, was a gentleman, Jim Kuhlman, of the Incremental Development Alliance. And especially Chuck Marone discovered as a city planner himself, was that he would bring proposals to his city council for a development, a redevelopment. You would take down, let's say, traditional one- to two-story buildings in a commercial district that had been developed before World War II, and that seemed to not be, you know, fully rented, did seem to be run down a little bit, and they would clear that block, and then would bring something in. So what they brought in his community was a taco joint, and they applied all the modern planning and zoning parameters to that: parking, setback, signage, lighting, egress and ingress. And he began to run the numbers, the kinds of incentives they were offering the developer to redevelop that piece of property, and compared the tax revenues and the job creation per acre of that redeveloped site with another block, a very similar block to what had been taken down to make way for the taco place, found that it was still generating more revenues per square acre and more jobs than the taco joint would do. So he began to ask the question, well, why are we incentivizing unsustainable development? And so when you start looking at suburban sprawl, you start seeing the cost associated with running the infrastructure through a large development subdivision and the number of people it serves. You start getting the infrastructure out of whack with the revenues going to be generated by that. And here's an example. He points out, for instance, a place, Lafayette, Louisiana, in 1929, I believe. No, sorry, 1949. I'm getting my dates mixed up. There were the number of residents served, it would require 5 foot of water supply pipe per person. With suburban sprawl, with annexation, which they did, and which KCK has done, we did that ourselves, with annexation, that ratio is now 50 feet of pipe required per person. They required for 1,000 people, approximately, because of the density of the traditional development along commercial corridors, they required about 3 fire hydrants, and now it's over 51 fire hydrants. So the infrastructure costs start to get out of whack. And so what I would argue is that in our traditional neighborhoods, we have a tremendous amount of affordable housing stock, a lot of it which needs to be renovated. We have a lot of vacant parcels, which over the years were tax delinquent. They became blighted. They were taken out. We've been more aggressive taking out some blighted properties. We have about 7,400 vacant parcels in our traditional neighborhoods. And if we can just redevelop 10% of those just back to single family, we would generate anywhere between $850 and $1 million more in property tax revenues, which would allow us then to provide more service and or reduce the mill levy further. So the long-term plan, I think the long-term strategy for us is to focus and bring improved services, improve the quality of life for residents in our traditional neighborhoods, so that we continue to attract residents and they will continue to invest. And as Chuck Marone would say, if you can take a neighborhood of, the ideal is not to take a neighborhood of $50,000 homes, clear them out, and replace them with $250,000 homes. The ideal is to take your $50,000 homes, bring incremental improvements to that neighborhood so that now those homes appraise at $55,000. So you have a 10% improvement in your tax base just by bringing simple incremental improvements. But the approach is really neighborhood-centric. In other words, what is the experience of those who live in their neighborhoods, and what is going to allow me to feel as if I see improvements in my neighborhood, it's worth my investment, it's worth me living here and bringing my family here and staying here.
And so when you look at different neighborhoods, look at, let's say, Armadale, Argentine, Quindaro, and Turner, would the approach be the same for all those neighborhoods, or would each neighborhood call for a different approach?
Yeah, and I think so. The approach is the same. The approach is to work with the neighborhood groups, the people who live there, to say, in your opinion, what do you need in your neighborhood? What could we do in your neighborhood that is going to tie you more closely to your neighborhood, to help you increase your personal investment in your neighborhood? I think those are the kinds of questions we need to ask, and that changes. You know, I live in Turner, and we are a township. Most of us were a township that was annexed by the city, and the city never really brought any, you know, improvement in services. It took us 50 years to get major improvements to some of our major streets, arterial streets, and that's just too long to wait. But once they did bring that improvement, again, it said to me, and it said to other neighbors, this is worth investing in. This is something more that ties me to this location. I don't need to look elsewhere. I think if you look at the area of Turtle Hill, Strawberry Hill, Russian Hill, that's much more dense. That area has more of a commercial corridor feel, unlike Turner, with some existing business doing very well, more that are wanting to locate there. And we have to look at that area and say, well, what's going to make this better? Maybe it's changing in police strategy. Maybe it's improvement in lightings, you know, make it much more walkable. Communicate security through improved lighting, maybe even some security cameras along the commercial corridors. Quindaro has its own set of needs, specifically, you know, the issues with a food desert. So I think the approach is the same, that you work with neighborhood leaders to help them identify what improvements they need to and what will the return on investment be for those improvements. We don't have a ton of cash. It doesn't exist. We have to be very judicious with everything we expend, and we have to start asking, you know, how is this going to improve quality of life, and can that be measured by improvement in property values?
And you mentioned the food deserts. Besides food deserts, one issue that affects a lot of the neighborhoods are environmental issues, and they go to environmental justice issues. How will you address those?
Well, again, that's there's some very strong individuals engaged in that. I think it depends. I know that you may know Richard Mabian.
Yes.
And Richard is kind of really, he just presented very briefly to me last week. We were kind of rushed in our meeting. Issues around just diesel exhaust fumes that emanate from I-70 or 635. That's a continuing issue. I have to say that I do believe that some of these air quality issues, at least, some of the air quality issues, not things like lead paint and not things like long-standing brownfields. But I think some of the air pollution issues will be addressed as we transition to, frankly, autonomous driving vehicles. Mid-America Regional Council presented to us their plan or proposal, whatever, their ideas about closing the north loop of the north side of the downtown loop, and which would push the traffic then to the south loop, and would come across Kansas at 670. And so there's some issues with doing that, but one of the reasons that was even feasible was in over a 20-year period, you can anticipate more and more autonomous driving vehicles as they improve the technology and as they can demonstrate that it's actually safer to employ an autonomous driving vehicle than personally driving, and show that the costs actually are better for individuals, I think people will transition to it. I just had a conversation with a local business leader on Friday. He did did an assessment, and he's shifted over to Uber, going to work, getting around just by using Uber. And he found that it has reduced his cost, it would reduce his cost, personal cost for transportation, 60%. Now that's significant. And as people take more cars off the road, they drive more efficiently, there'll be fewer backups, because autonomous driving vehicles will be safer and they will reduce the congestion, we're going to see improvement on some of those things. The other thing I would say is, if we do invest in our traditional neighborhoods and really focus in on our traditional commercial corridors, we will have more walkable neighborhoods. And more walkable neighborhoods clearly is better for health, but it's also then takes some of the pressure on the environment.
And what about, at least in the interim, while we develop some of those things, expanding the routes for the bus service, and not just the routes, but the schedules. I know in Wyandotte County, besides having only a few routes that you have to somehow get to those to even get the bus, but a lot of them, they end at like 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the
Correct.
Evening.
Yeah. Well, it all comes down to money, and money all comes down to tax revenues. And tax revenues all come down to property values and sales tax. So I just came from a budget presentation, and even with a 7.9% improvement in property tax valuations across the county, which I have to remind people is a good thing. If our property values are going up, that's a good thing. That means that more people are demanding the properties, and that allows us then, it does generate more revenues, which then allows us to provide better service and perhaps more services, but also to reduce the mill levy. The difficulty for us in our tax situation is, with the mill levies being where they are, it does act as a disincentive for folks who want to buy homes, build businesses, and we also have a 11.9% tax on our Board of Public Utilities bill. The Board of Public Utilities provides very competitive rates for electricity and water. And then when you add on 11.9% on top of that, which is a revenue stream for the city, that's a disincentive for businesses to expand or to locate. And so it's something that has to be dealt with. Our long-term, so as much as we would like to expand services, and I can list you a dozen services that need to be expanded, not to mention infrastructure projects that we really need to take care of, that we just simply don't have the funds for, short of a major increase in taxes or greater development. And that's why, again, I'm going to argue that the long-term strategy here is to be very judicious with any expenditures we make, that we can show a return on investment that actually improves property values, which, again, will bring in more tax revenues, which can be used for more services or reduction in the tax rate. And we have to be reduce the property taxes because we don't want it to be a disincentive. So we're in a difficult space. It's taken us six decades to get into this position. We're not going to get out of it next year. And there are there's not a day goes by that someone doesn't come to me with, this is a great plan, this would be great for our elderly, this would be great for our youth, this would be great for our streets, this would be great for our pet population, this would be great for, yep, all that is true. That's all true. Mm-hmm. Show me where the money comes from. And that's where the conversation ends.
Okay. And in the past, there were some developments, the Hilton Hotel downtown,
yes,
and the theaters and some of the shops at Legends, where the city actually invested and had an ownership in it. The movie theaters, of course, worked out very well. We
yes.
got that back, and I think much earlier than what was planned.
Yes.
What is the status with the Hilton? Are we out of that now?
Oh, yes. We've been out of that for a while. In fact, the Peachtree Group just recently purchased the prior ownership, and they're investing $5 million in renovation of that facility. They're excited about the prospects of what is beginning to happen downtown, especially now with the announcement for University of Kansas Health System at Strawberry Hill, the Strawberry Hill campus.
Yeah. And one place where it did not work out so well was I don't know if it was just one shop or not, but the barbecue restaurant at the Legends, we
right.
owned part of that, and that went bankrupt.
Right.
How much did we lose on that, and is there a way to recover it?
Yeah, no, it's not getting recovered. They auctioned off the paraphernalia that we had purchased, and There were complaints that how the auction was handled, whether it generated the right revenues, whether we reached the right group of people who might want to buy some of those items. We do have the sound system, which actually will be reinstalled perhaps in Memorial Hall, which would be a great use of that equipment. But the investment that the UG put in that did not pan out.
Okay.
It's interesting. I would say this is where I think it's different. The movie theaters out at the Legends, at that point, there were no movie theaters in Wyandotte County, indoor movie theaters. And so that was a thing that again, amenities for residents, they have to go out of county just to go see a movie. Mm-hmm. So the argument was made that we need to do this and that it will then pick up and move on its own, which it did. The same could be said for the Hilton Garden Inn, that sometimes the only way in Wyandotte County we've been able to get the amenities we need is we bear the cost, but structure it in such a way that it can then be sold to a private person, individual, or investor, after they demonstrated this is viable. I think time and again we found out in Wyandotte County that sometimes we get in our own way. And I'm not saying those were mistakes. I'm just, when we looked at, for instance, the Prescott Plaza area, which is 18th and I-70, that was an old truck stop, been vacant for years, run down, and now there is a Sunfresh Market and a lot of other retail shops there, a lot of mom and pops, in fact, local business owners, mm-hmm. small business owners. And so there was a lot of UG incentive to that and support for that, and it's paying off in spades. In fact, now they're saying they wish they had made the Sunfresh Market bigger. I think sometimes we have to see the fundamentals when others won't, and demonstrate that the fundamentals are there so that others can then come in and say, oh, okay, you were right about this. If you know the Pala Vista, for instance, residential development there is on the top of 7th Street, just north of I-70. Old school buildings, they took it out, kept the stone retaining walls right on the street level, very beautiful. The comment when they developed that, when it was completed, was, we wish we had made it larger. So I think we have to remind ourselves that just because we've had 5 decades or 6 decades of disinvestment leading up to the last 15 to 20 years, that trajectory does not have to continue on. That there are fundamentals in play in Wyandotte County that are going to continue to attract investment, and we have to be aware of those and make sure we work with those fundamentals and help those things happen.
The housing development on 7th that you just mentioned, has that worked out? And the reason I'm wondering is, if I heard right, those houses were selling when they were first built for around 90 to 100,000. But the surrounding neighborhoods all have houses that are maybe 30 to 40,000.
Correct, yeah.
And so myself, and I know other people I talked to, wondered if those were going to sell and be successful if they're surrounded by those other areas.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would have said 40 years ago probably would not have worked. But mm-hmm. but I think, when my mom grew up on Strawberry Hill, the difference was, so her family had been there since, really the 1850s. And her grandfather owned a meat market where the former EPA building was. Mm-hmm. They're a very successful family. You can never really go broke selling meat. And so they did very well. But they lived on Strawberry Hill. And as the immigrants came in, there was this real... In those days, the rich did not live that far away from the poor necessarily. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they were rich, but they were well off. But they didn't live that far away from the poor, so there was much more commonality. And I think we're kind of returning to that in some ways, that people are willing to go in and invest and have a $300,000, $400,000 home in the midst of $100,000 mm-hmm. homes. People don't realize that, but Armor Hills on the Missouri side was built by J.C. Nichols, designed by J.C. Nichols to be a buffer between inner city, what he would consider inner city or working class neighborhoods, and the more professional neighborhoods further west along Ward Parkway. He specifically built that neighborhood to be the buffer. I don't know that we have those same kinds of issues we once